right, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Triangle Sports Talk podcast. This is our fourth episode. I'm James Biernot, as always, alongside my good pal, Pauly Lascalzo. And it's been a much, much, much happier week, I think, for Pauly and us both. We don't have to talk about a lot of negatives here on the podcast, especially when it comes to Drexel men's or women's basketball, both good things on their end. But we're going to start it off first with our newest reoccurring segment, the Campus Catch-Up. So, Pauly, I want to start it off with men's lacrosse. Last episode, we weren't able to talk about their game against Lafayette, which they ended up winning 12-10, came back down six towards the, or down four towards the end of the game, came back, scored six to win that one. The first win for new head coach Steve Boyle. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, you were pretty locked in on that game. I think, you know, it's good to get a win like that, a feel-good comeback win, especially at home. Like, I think that is a big confidence builder. You would have liked to think it'd be a good confidence builder. Next game against UAlbany, kind of, you know, maybe a step back after that. But, yeah, overall, just really happy to see the Coach Boyle get a win and the team get a nice comeback win.
Definitely, definitely. So it was a good game. I really enjoyed it. I got to watch a good amount of it. The first quarter, it looked like the Dragons were going to shut them out. They had complete control of the ball, looked locked down on defense, barely gave the Leopards a chance to do anything. Connor Hooley had a really good game. He had a hat trick. Caden Zedell also had a hat trick. And it was also a great defensive game. And we saw a first career, pretty much full length of the field shot and goal from Pat Lyman, sophomore on the team. So big congrats to him. But like you mentioned, they weren't really able to carry that to the road. They headed to New York to take on UAlbany. The Great Danes had six goals in the third quarter and ended up winning the game 16-9. They outshot the Dragons, 48-33. So that definitely wasn't as great a game. Kind of looked a little more similar to their first game of the season against UMBC, where they couldn't really get as many shots off, just really didn't look as strong on defense. So they will hope to rebound a little bit against New Jersey Institute of Technology on Wednesday night, and then they will be again on the road on Saturday against Mercer. So it should be interesting to see how they fare.
Yeah, hopefully hopefully bounce back after UAlbany.
Definitely, yeah. So one more thing to mention with men's lacrosse. Preseason poll had Towson towards the top there, 0-4 to start the year, kind of shockingly. But Fairfield, who was not in the top 20 to start the year, have found themselves at number 18. They just beat Brown 11-5 on the road. So they're definitely a talented squad. But with Towson struggling so much, Stony Brook's only 2-2. I think there's a real shot the men's lacrosse team could find themselves back in the CAA tourney and have a shot to go back to NCAA. But with that, let's take it over to the women's lacrosse side of things. Really exciting game on Friday night. They headed to the USA Lacrosse headquarters and upset the Harvard Crimson 14-12 behind one short of the school record, eight goals, a career high from Anna Maria Grognani. Not just eight goals, she did it on eight shots, Pauly, so that's pretty nuts. And Allison Drake also had a hat trick, but talk to me a little bit about that game because that was a really exciting one.
Yeah, I mean, we at the Triangle had boots on the ground at the USA Lacrosse headquarters watching this game. Shout out to Casey Sheamus, who made the trek down to Maryland for this game. But, you know, against a team like Harvard, just a real class team in the NCAA, what a win, what a statement win for the women's team here. You know, they had incredibly difficult out-of-conference schedule to start off with just – ranked team after ranked team after ranked team. And, you know, to take down Harvard in comeback fashion behind, I mean, eight goals on eight shots is ridiculous from Anna Maria Grognani. So, you know, well-deserved win. And, you know, I'm sure on the bus ride back from Maryland that she was feeling pretty good. So, you know, great win for the Dragons. Yeah. Good to get the confidence back. And then you're right, heading to Penn State right after that. So, talk about, you know, going from one big game to another.
Absolutely. Yeah, they'll take on Penn State on the road on Wednesday at 4 p.m. They're also 2-2. And then they'll be back home at Vitus to take on Fairfield, their CAA opponent, on Saturday or Sunday. I forget exactly which day that is. But really good game for the women's lacrosse team. Gives them an opportunity to get some momentum. Three of their four games so far have been against top 25 opponents. UConn, Harvard, and UPenn all in the top 25. So that's obviously really impressive. You mentioned the strength of schedule. The one thing of possible worry for this team is they've kind of been carried on offense by really two players. 31 of their 50 goals have come from Anna Maria Grognani and Allison Drake, and almost half of their shots have also come from them. So they definitely do get production from people like B. Buckley and a lot of other great players, but they are definitely in need of a little bit more power on the offensive side. We'll see if that comes into play Wednesday night against Penn State. And with that, let's head over to the wrap-up of our campus catch-up. Just running around, our sports wrestling lost to Maryland 23-13 at the DAC on Friday night. Men's tennis lost to New Jersey Institute of Technology and then beat VCU, so a good win for them. Both men and women's squash beat Columbia on Saturday, obviously taking down an Ivy, that's very impressive, but lost to Penn on Thursday. Our swim team heads to the CAA Championships on Wednesday at the Hampton Aquaplex. They obviously had a great year. And then to wrap it up, men's rowing will head to the Redwood Shores Invitational in Redwoods, California this weekend. So a good way for them to get their spring season started. And with that, that is all we have for you on the campus catch-up. Paulie, we had a very exciting game last Thursday night. The final matchup ever, possibly, between the Drexel Dragons and Delaware Blue Hens, one of the biggest CAA rivalries. We got to say CUSA later, which was very exciting, a 78-74 victory. So talk to me a little bit about this game. What'd you like, what'd you not like?
So what I liked, you know, not at the risk of being too, you know, simplistic, is just that they won. This was such a big game for so many reasons. Drexel men's basketball was just on a terrible run of form. And not that they were playing so badly in the games leading up to this Drexel Delaware game, but they were losing heartbreaker after heartbreaker after heartbreaker. We talked about that UNCW double overtime loss, games at Towson that you lost on a called back buzzer beater, getting just, you know, in a competitive game with William Mary and you just get smoked in the last 5 minutes of the game to blow it. Like, it was demoralizing loss after demoralizing loss. It really hadn't been a good win since the Delaware homecoming win that made you feel really good. So, you know, you go back to Delaware on the road. It's your last ever matchup. And a little bit of, you know, fun fact trivia, the Dragons and Blue Hens all-time record dating back to 1912 was tied at 85-85. So it was, this was the grudge match. Whoever won this game could go out saying that you are the all-time winner in the rivalry between Drexel and Delaware. And hey, Drexel came out hot. They went out to a 9-0 lead in the first 2 minutes. They built upon that throughout the first half. And, you know, Delaware is a good team. They have talent on their team, and they made some runs back at Drexel. But at halftime, 9-point lead. And to come out of the second half, Delaware came out hard. They, you know, they even took a lead at one point with about 14 minutes left. But Drexel, you know, can't say enough about how they fought back, got the lead back, and then were able to ice a win in an important game against a good team, you know, to close it out. Delaware's record may not reflect that they're a good team. They have really talented players on that team. John Camden, Pasha, really good talent. So to be able to, in a game that meant a lot, have such a good performance, you know, was a good feeling. It was really important that Drexel was able to put that together because, boy, did they need a win.
They definitely did. It was a big one. Even though it was only a 4-point victory, it felt like it had so much more impact than that. You didn't even mention Kevin Riley, one of the better shooters in CAA, too. Delaware does have a good squad. Their record, like you mentioned, does not reflect that. But overall in this game, the Dragons knew what they were doing well, I think, and kind of were able to elevate that. Even though Delaware caught up, it was a little bit back and forth. They were able to stay in command for a majority of the game. They shot 59% from the field. That obviously is a great number there. And they got really good production from their bench based on the minutes that were played. Shane Blakeney, 56% from the field, adds in 13 points. Ville doesn't miss a shot. Kavan doesn't miss a shot. The bench was really productive. You have starters going in there, giving you big minutes, going the whole game. It's just the game, you look at the numbers, you look at the result, and you can feel happy about that.
Yeah, and you talk about the box score. You have five different players in double-digit scoring. That's a recipe for winning basketball. That's something Amy Mallon would be proud of. Yeah, she loves to see a box score like that. Yeah. And again, you know, you mentioned this, another strong game from Shane Blakeney. That's important to see him continuing his strong month. There was one moment, though. He did get a breakaway, fast break, tried to just bring the house down, slam dunk, missed it, and got hurt in the same play. That wasn't good. Shane, just light up next time. Protect yourself and make sure you score that bucket. Yeah. And also, I will say, the game, it was a four-point game in the end. That it wasn't a four-point game. It was, you know, they hit, Delaware hit a few late threes to make it look closer than it was, play the foul game. It was not a four-point game as close as it may seem. But still, Drexel, I was impressed with the fact that in a game that Delaware's trying to foul, be aggressive, stuff like that, Drexel handled it well. They had some good out-of-bounds plays to make sure you got the ball in the hands of Deuce Drake, who's your best free-throw shooter, or Kobe McGee. So, you know, I was impressed with the way that they close out this game because, as we've seen against UNCW, against Towson, that is not Drexel's specialty.
No, late-game execution is something they really, really struggle at, and you're looking at the box score 14 for 15 from the line. That's almost unheard of for Drexel basketball, and it's led by Deuce Drake, who throughout the year has been our best free throw shooter, but especially late in the game, he is the dragon that averages the most points in the last 5 minutes and overtime of games. He's hitting those free throws. He hits them at, I think, almost 80-85% rate. He's a really good shooter. And then at the end of the Charleston game too, which we'll get a little bit more into that, Drexel had the lead up 15 for a majority of that game, 15 or more. Towards the last 5 minutes, Charleston started to inch back and crawl back a little bit. And instead of just going fully defensive, let's not let them score another bucket, we really did a good job of getting the ball to the person you want to be fouled, holding onto the ball, but not just holding onto it for the whole possession, holding onto it, getting it to midcourt, getting it to someone else. And although we didn't have a great offensive rate at the end of the game, it didn't feel as one-sided in Charleston. So I think late game execution and late game play, coaching, whatever you want to say, definitely improved.
And that I will say, I think I've been hard on Coach Spiker throughout the year about some of the late game spots that we've fallen apart in. This is a team where, you know, like, candidly, Deuce Drake has never at the Division I level had the ball in his hands before at the end of the game. Like, that's never been his role. This is his role now. And there were times where I'm sure he struggled. Yeah. Shane Blakeney barely was trusted to have the ball in his hands in a blowout last year, much less in really important moments at the end of games. So, you know, as much as I was tough on Coach Spiker, it is, you know, if you want to say they're getting better now because they're getting used to it, hopefully I can believe that. And hopefully that's the case because they have shown that they are maybe handling things a lot better now in recent games than they were at the beginning of the season.
And I think it's a maturity thing too, because you look at Shane and Deuce, and you said this exactly, Shane had probably 60 total minutes of D1 basketball and Deuce didn't have a minute coming into this year. And to start the year, that was super, super obvious. I was really high on Shane coming into the year. I thought he was going to have a great start to the season and just really be this great, like, 2-3 guard almost. He didn't have that. And he was really frustrating to watch pretty much up until the start of February. Deuce, too, another guy that really struggled up until, like, mid-January, kind of until, like, the Penn State game almost, didn't find his role. Now they know it. Now they've gotten the reps in, and now you see them with more confidence at the end of games. And that makes me feel so much better for next year because they're two guys that I feel Spiker's done well by them. They've been able to advance themselves this year. I hope they'll both be on the program with the program next year. But I definitely will say how they've played recently and how they've been able to help Drexel improve so much later in the game is just, I think, a big maturity thing and gives you confidence.
Yeah, and I will say, too, you know, Deuce Drake, not his best shooting night. No. 3 for 11, 0 for 5 from three-point land. You know, that's not great. But the fact that, like, if this was November, me and you would probably be irate right now talking about Deuce Drake just putting up shots and like, Deuce, it's not working. You got, like, let's go to something else. And that was a conversation we were having a lot in the stands earlier on in the season. now, it, even on nights like this, where it's maybe not his best offensive night, he's still showing to be a valuable player in a lot of ways. 6 assists in this game. A couple of them are really nice. And, you know, as we said, best free throw shooter, reliable down the stretch to make his free throws, and generally like make good decisions with the ball in his hands late in games. So Deuce Drake has earned a lot of trust with Coach Spiker. He's earned a lot of trust with us.
Yeah.
And and I will say too, Shane, happy to see how many shots he took, 9 shots.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case against Charleston. So definitely I'm curious, what did you see in Charleston that you liked and that you didn't like?
So definitely, you got to watch a lot more of the Delaware game. I got to see a lot more of the Charleston game. We opened that game so incredibly well. The first like 5-ish minutes of the game, Charleston was in command. They were up 5 points. Then we tied it up. Then we scored 16 unanswered points against not just one of the best offenses in the CAA, one of the best teams in the CAA. They're a really deep team. And not just that, they have probably the best big men in the conference. You've got Lazar Djokovic, who had some really, really great performances and is a really big player and a very versatile player for a guy who's 6'10", 6'11". Same thing with Ante Brzezic. Everyone in the crowd around me was calling him Baby Jokic. I personally didn't think he was quite as dominant, but he is a guy that can really dominate an offense and lead an offense. They're a team that has a lot of guys that can excel in whatever role they're given. A lot of their transfers have been able to come in, and when they need them to score, they score. When they need them to defend, they defend. But they also have guys that are great scorers and great passers, or great scorers and rebounders and passers. They have a lot of really versatile players, and we just did a great job at stopping all of that. And I think that is a real good testament to our defense. Nobody in the conference had held Charleston under 66. We held them to 55, so that's a big thing. But really, offensively, in the first half, it was all Kobe McGee. He had 14 points. He was taking a lot of three-pointers, which is something that we really like. And it kind of forced Charleston's hand. They started shooting more of the long ball because we started to get the lead to 14, 16, 18, and then start to hold it there. And that was really impressive to me. To be up that much for that much of the game against Charleston is huge. Also, rotationally, this was, in my eyes, Spiker's masterclass rotationally. The point guard play was great. Kavon, 10 minutes, Shane, 24, and Deuce, 27. Now, I'm going to talk about how these minutes were played out a little bit. Kavon did a great job ball handling when he was out there. Lead guy on ball, it was more of him without Deuce. And when he was on ball, I really liked what I saw from Shane Blakeney. Because Shane was doing a great job defending, moving without the ball. Shane's athleticism was ridiculous in the Charleston game. I can't tell you how many times I saw him jump up, make these super athletic plays, not really look like a point guard, and that's okay to me. Because he really has been playing like such a great off-ball guard. I don't need him handling the ball. I want him taking 4 or 5 threes a game now. And so that was the thing that, even though he wasn't taking a lot of shots, he didn't score a lot, it looked like he was getting more accustomed to that role, which I really did like, because I do want to keep seeing Deuce and Kavon as the ball handlers, maybe even Yame in there, based on he's been shooting kind of poorly recently. But I think Shane looked really good in those 24 minutes, even if the stat sheet really doesn't show it. Additionally, Vic and Ville looked really great in the paint. Ante was pretty much silent in the first half. Lazar Djokovic was silent most of the game. Those are guys that can, Lazar especially, can shoot the ball too and can shoot the deep ball. And I think when you have guys like Vic and Ville that can spread the floor, definitely, that's important to have. So this is the third lowest point total they scored of the year. No one else in the CAA has held them to it, so that makes me feel really great.
Yeah, you hold a team that's averaging 76.5 points to 55 points in a game. That's good. And listen, part of that is Drexel basketball. They're going to slow the game down, minimize your chances. But so to take a really good team like Charleston, make them play on your terms, not like let them dictate the pace of play and just, you know, take the game to them. That you got to feel really good about that. And I agree with you. I think, you know, Shane Blakeney came into college as a combo guard. That was his thing. And he was probably a better 2 than a 1. And I still feel that way.
I think last year he was a better 2 than a 1.
His skill set is that he's super athletic. Yeah. He is a good shooter, despite what his early season numbers indicated. He is athletic. He can defend with anyone. Like, he brings a lot to the table that I don't think necessarily shows itself in his ball handling. So I like you, agree that playing him as a two with Kevon, with Deuce, that could be better than, you know, the weird, you know, Shane takes the ball up once, Kevon takes the ball up once. Like, they, I don't know. I like what it is if he just stays strictly as a two in those minutes. But yeah, I another thing that I liked out of this game, aggressive Kobe, as you mentioned. We last pod talked about that. We just, like, Kobe, we need you to be more aggressive. I think he took more shot attempts in this game against Charleston than he did in the two games that we talked about last pod. So
I'm pretty sure he did.
I'm pretty sure he took 14 between those two games and 15 today. So that is what we need, Kobe. Like, 4 for 11 from 3, 36%. That's a good stat line. I don't care. Like, if that is – if you're taking 11 threes and shooting 36.5%, good. That is a really good offensive performance for you, Kobe. And I'll say this once, I'll say it again. The Zach Spiker has told me before, you don't want to take the you know, good shot early when you can get a great shot late in the shot clock. Like, that's the way that they want to play sometimes. Every shot Kobe McGee takes from three is a good shot to me. He is so good that take a shot. If you have an ounce of daylight, get it up. That's, and especially, you know, we have good rebounding the guys on the court. I like Victor Panoff, good rebounder. Cole Hargrove, good rebounder.
Shane Blakeney, good rebounder.
So, you know, I William had two offensive rebounds in this game. Like, that's good in 17 minutes. Whatever. So I would like to see him just put that ball up. If you miss, whatever. But more than likely, it's going in. So I really am happy with what I saw in this box score.
And what to what you're saying, you're absolutely right. Kobe taking 15 shots and taking 11 threes, a lot of those came in the first half. And I'll look up the exact number he took in the first half. But what that really did in that 16-5 run, that was when Kobe played his best basketball. And it was because he was not waiting later in the possession a lot of the time to take the good shot. He would get the ball with 14 seconds left on the shot clock and take it and make it. And that was what was so good. And even when he wasn't making those shots, it was good shot selection, like you mentioned. And then it really did force Charleston's hand. It felt like they played Drexel basketball for 35 out of the 40 minutes of this game. And that's super, super impressive. We talked before this game. We can beat anyone in this conference. We've shown that we can beat everyone or anyone. This was the game that really proved, hey, a 9-point victory, this was a much more dominant victory than that, just based on how much of the game Drexel really, really just beat the crap out of them. And so it's got to make you feel good. Let me get you that number.
This game, I mean, we're talking about beating Charleston handedly at home. If you look at the best teams that we've played this season, you should have beaten Towson twice. You should have beaten UNCW in the one game you played against them in the back.
Should have beat William and Mary the second time.
You smacked Charleston in the one game. That's the top three. That's three of the top four teams in this conference. That has got to make you feel good.
Definitely.
That got to give you some confidence. And I think the guys needed to see themselves just win this a game. Like, win a big one. And, you know, Delaware was a big one for emotional reasons. This was a big one for, like, you just crushed a really good team.
Deuce and Kobe, though, too. Like, you could really tell they were pumped. Post-game in the interview room, I sadly got locked out right before they started, so I didn't get to hear the interviews. But seeing the look on their faces, seeing Kevon walk by, seeing Vic walk by, just smiling, it was a good game. And you had the emotional game against Delaware. You had the dominant game against Charleston. Your last five games in the DAC have all been good games for the most part. Win versus Charleston, loss versus UNCW in overtime, win versus William and Mary by 20, win at homecoming versus Delaware, win over Hofstra. Those are five good games. It really just, like, you've played these two teams that you're going to play the last two games of the season close. It's Hampton, it's Monmouth. You can beat both those teams. You lost to Monmouth on kind of an outlier game. Win these two games, and then the momentum that you have going to this tournament dramatically changes because you're not playing on day one as a 11 through 14 seed. You're playing on day two on the road against one of those lower seeds. Then you have that momentum going against these teams that you can beat. Because your second round game, if you're able to win round one, is a Towson or a UNCW or a Charleston. That makes me feel really good. These last two games, we keep saying this, like all these new next two games are going to determine something. If these next two games go really well and go as well as the previous two have gone, I think the Dragons have a real shot to go on a run.
Yeah, and so like you said, we, after the William and Mary and Hampton road swing, pretty much said, like, you just got to win out. Like, you got to win every game you play from now on if you want to be serious. And it was hard because you had to play Charleston. Guess what? You just beat the best team in that four-game stretch that we said you need to win every game in. So you have done the hard part, finished out strong. This was also the first time that Drexel went 2-0 in a Thursday-Saturday slate of the schedule. That's crazy. That was the first thing Coach Spiker said in the post-game press conference was, this is the first time we went 2-0. That is crazy that happened, but hey, you did it. You got that, weight off your back. Do it again. And if I can just talk about the standings a little bit, the importance of going 2-0 in these next games is crucial. You are playing Monmouth and Hampton, who are currently the number 6 and number 8 seeds in the CAA right now. Drexel is currently number 10. So if you go 2-0, you take your conference total to 9-9 on the season, 500.
Yeah.
Exactly mid. If, in all likelihood, if you beat Hampton and Monmouth, Hampton goes down to 8-10. So you could reasonably go up to number 8 in the standings pretty easily just by going 2-0 this weekend.
Yeah.
The importance of that, you then have to win your 8-9 matchup, which would be either against Hampton or Northeastern. Most likely.
Very winnable games.
Very winnable games. And then you play Towson. If you had your choice between playing Towson or UNCW in the next game of the seeding, you would probably want to play Towson because you should have beat them twice.
Yeah.
And you match up really well against them. So the importance is really huge to win these two games, get that 8 seed. Yeah. Secure it, and it lends itself well going down to DC for the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Seeding's super key. And with that, let's transition a little bit over to the women's basketball side. Paulie, like, we've been talking about win after win after win. I just want to quickly, before we start these last two games, go over some big numbers and some trends for this team, because they really have been on an incredible run. 9-1 in their last 10. They've won 8 straight games where more than just Amaris Baker is in double figures. And they're 12-1 this year when they score 58-plus, that one game being the loss to Penn State in overtime on the road. So really, really impressive. They know what they need to do to win. And recently, if you look at these box scores, although it's been a little bit mixed up, they're doing the right things to win, and it hasn't all been Amaris Baker. Recently, Amaris Baker's taken a lot less of the driver's seat role. She's still taking a good amount of shots, but it's not 50% of your shots anymore, which is so great for this team. And you look at, Wynn versus Campbell, we'll talk about in a second. Kara has 23, Amaris 13, Deja 15. Then the next game, Chloe 20, Deja 15, Kara 11. That's got to make you feel so good when you can have four different players able to grab you double digits on any given night.
Yeah, the team is really rounding into shape. I love what I'm seeing from the women's team. On one hand, I am white-knuckling every single time I'm watching this team because they play close games pretty much no matter what. That win against Elon, I was on a train watching this game, and I was just, like, gasping in my seat watching how just scary it was closing that game out. But the numbers speak for themselves. Like you said, 9-1 in their last 10. They're just finding a way to win. And like you said, what I'm loving is what I'm seeing out of Kara McCormick, what I'm seeing out of Chloe Hodges, Deja Evans, 2 15-point performances in the last two games. That's the Deja Evans we've been waiting for all season
long.
I think that this team is Amaris Baker returning to her normal form away from being more or less unstoppable in the CAA tournament, because when when we played North Carolina A&T the first time, who's the number one seed in the CAA, it was Maris Baker. I don't know exactly how many points she had.
33 points. 33. Nobody had more than 8.
So that was it. Just you were never going to win that game playing like that. If Maris Baker can score 17 points in that game, and Cara McCormick scores, you know,
14.
Yeah, 14.
Chloe grabs 12. Daisy exactly. 10. It's such a different
it's
game.
Way better. And and Amy Mallon knows it. And I talked to her. She said, if I see 4 people with double digits in the box score, I think we won that game. Yeah. If I just see that and nothing else. And she's right, because that is literally all it takes.
Yeah.
Because this team is so stout defensively. They do all the little things right. I mean, when you look at the raw turnover numbers, it makes you kind of cringe a little bit. 18 against Campbell and 18 against Elon. That's a lot. Guess what? They are 11th in the CAA in turnovers. They have a better turnover margin than almost anyone in the league. Yeah. The league on the women's side of the CAA is a little bit messy at times. Yeah, so, you know, this team is very clean. They know how to win games down the stretch. As I mentioned against Elon, they had a little bit of a lead, and Elon was making a surge. They're playing the foul game, and they just Drexel handled it well at the end and did not allow Elon to, you know, complete the comeback and win this game down late. It's amazing to see this team find success that we knew they could get and them really grow into their roster.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Friday night they were on the road at Campbell, 60-54 win. Kara McCormick, 7-for-9 from the field, 5-for-6 from 3 for 23 points and 5 assists. Ridiculous game for her. That was a great one. One thing that really is interesting about this, only 15 minutes of play from the entire bench. So that's an Amy Mallon trademark a little bit once in a while when we'll see. Not a lot of bench usage, but that was a little bit crazy. It seems like maybe earlier in the game we could have seen a little more Lane McGurk, a little more Molly Lavin. So a little interesting there. And then Sunday, win at Elon. Chloe Hodges, 7-for-8 from the field, 7-for-7 from 2-point, 20 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. Another performance where she's right away, right close to a triple-double. But again, the bench not really getting involved. And I just want to mention this. Grace O'Neill, over her last 9 games, is shooting under 30% from the field, yet she gets 38-plus minutes a game. So personally, and this is not calling out Amy Mallon or Grace, I'd love to see Lane McGurk eat up a few of those minutes. I'm cool if you want to give Chloe Amaris and Kara 40 minutes a game, but I think there's a way to mix it around. Also, based on sizing, because I'm just going to say this, if we get to the NCAA tournament, we have 3 players who are 5'7" and under starting in the lineup and playing 38 minutes. We are not going to come within 20 points.
Yeah, do not get me in trouble getting me started talking about Grace O'Neill in the rotation. But I will say I agree with you that Lane McGurk has a role to play on this team. She has shown it from time to time that she can be an offensive weapon that other people can't. She's about 6 feet tall. She can rebound. She plays hard. She plays in the dirty areas of the floor. She has no problem getting fouled or, you know, diving for a loose ball. Grace O'Neill gets great effort. She does a lot really well across the court. In the game against Elon, she had a very important late banged in 3 from half court. I hate to say it. I don't know if that was sustainable, but irregardless. 8 points in that game, 4 turnovers, 2 assists, 3 rebounds. I don't know if she needed to play 39 minutes. Lane McGurk had 2 points on 1 shot. I would have liked to see Lane maybe take a few more shots, get in that game.
Same with Molly.
Molly's impressed me when she's played. I would love to see Deja and Molly play together a little bit more. I would love to see what we could do if we integrate a little bit more height in this lineup. And this is something I talked to Coach Mal about, and she acknowledged it and said, you know, that this is something she's thinking about too. North Carolina A&T is a tall team.
They are.
You need to figure out how are we going to beat this tall team, because when it comes down to it, it's probably going to be NCAT and Drexel for the title, like when you're looking at it like that.
They've been the only 2 teams that have just been like dominant the whole time. So yeah, absolutely, I agree with you. It's going to be weird. They're definitely like clicking on the fullest level. They are in a little bit of a weird spot with certain players struggling a little bit and then certain players really excelling. So you want to be able to come all the way together. Amaris Baker has not had her best play of late, 31.5% from the field over the last four games to only 10 points per game. But in those four games as well, Kara McCormick, 56% from the field, 50% from three, 16 points per game. Stepping it up, Chloe over her last six games, 53% from the field. And then listen to this, 13-9-5. That is a gorgeous stat line from the Aussie. I could not be more excited about the way she's been playing, the way Kara's been playing, the way Deja's been playing. I really think we need to see 17 minutes a game for Lane, 13 for Molly Lavin. Find a way to work that out a little bit, but I don't want to be making demands. Just a few games left in the season for the women's team, but I think, yeah, definitely spreading out the minutes could be a good way for them to have a better chance in CAA and a better chance in hopefully March Madness.
Yeah, I think you're finishing out against, I believe, Monmouth and Campbell, two teams that are 4-5 in the CAA. Drexel's pretty secure in the two seed. You have Charleston, that's 10-4 behind you, but we do have the tiebreaker against them, so really like a game and a half above Charleston. You'd love to see them go 2-0 here,
yeah.
Just for the sake of saying that you are, what, that'd be 11-1 in your last 13, just keep it going. But you really need to go 1-1 here. Two pretty decent teams in the CAA, but at this point, like, you're preparing for March. Like, everything you do, you're just saying, like, how do I stack up for the CAA tournament? Like, that's what matters, and you're going to finish out the stretch strong at home.
Yep. And I truly believe that if these final four games for both the men's and women's team result in all wins, there's a real world where we could see both these teams in March just based on the momentum that they are going to be riding with, especially the women's team. The men's team, too, though, they've been able to keep pace or beat anybody in the conference. They're riding on a hopefully four-game winning streak by the time we record next episode, which we'll be talking about the preview for the conference tournament.
Yeah, and if you want to know about the CAA tournament, make sure to check out the Triangle in print, in newsstands, all over campus and online, where James and I have put together quite the CAA tournament preview.
Absolutely.
So you're going to get all you need to know about it from there. But yeah, James, I agree with you. I don't want to look at this tournament through Drexel colored glasses, but both teams seem to have found their stride at the right time. If Drexel men's basketball can win the next two.
Yeah.
But you know, they seem to have found their stride at the right time, and the CAA is a wide open league on both sides. No team is a juggernaut. No team is just bad that they can't upset someone. So
yeah, it's ridiculous because you look at the standings and you might say, oh, Towson's 14-2 and NCAA&T are 12-2. They're juggernauts. But really, when you look a little deeper, Towson's had close games against a lot of lesser teams. NCAA&T played close games. It's a tight slate, I think, on both sides, and we'll definitely talk more about that next week. But from Pauly and I think that's all we have for you here in episode 4. Thank you for tuning in, and go Dragons.